Hello, this is David Harlow on Health Blog, Health BLAWG, and with me today is Dr. Paul Grundy, who is the Director of Healthcare, Technology, and Strategic Initiatives for IBM Global Wellbeing Services and Health Benefits. He is also President of the Patient-Centered Primary Care Collaborative, which is a group of large employers and primary care physician association. Dr. Grundy has years of experience in government and in the healthcare industry, and I am happy to welcome him today to Health Blog. Thank you, Dr. Grundy, for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me. It's only a pleasure to be with you.
Paul, I would ask if we could start off with a brief introduction on your experience with the Patient-Centered Medical Home Initiative at IBM. What is it exactly? When you use that term, what do you mean? How long has this been a project of IBM's, and what kind of impact is it having, both in terms of health status and cost savings?
So, the concept of a change of the covenant between the buyer of healthcare and the provider of healthcare is at least some years old in reference to the concept of better primary care, more integrated, more comprehensive primary care. We as buyers of care really reached the conclusion that if we were going to really shift the curve or bend the curve, as they call it now, and we were going to begin to add the kind of value in the doctor-patient relationship that our employees were asking of us to do, that it would take a transformation across the ecosystem. It would really take a change of covenant between the buyer and the provider of care, i.e. aligning payment at the macro level in exchange for micro-level transformation of practices to deliver better care. So our employees, or just in general the patients, what they really want, they want convenience, they want access, they want comprehensive care, they want relationship-based care. What they get now instead of that is they get episodes of care. And what we buy is an episode of care. So I can buy, the kind of care that allows me to get a pretty good amputation for my diabetic, but I can't buy the kind of comprehensive integrated care that prevents, my diabetics from needing an amputation is sort of the line I've been using for the last 4 years, and it's still true. So we thought about that long and hard at IBM and certainly many other companies as well. And some places have in essence created on-site facilities that do this. But since we have 60% of our employees that are scattered in every zip code, and we really wanted to be equitable for all of our employees, whether they happen to live next to a large IBM site or not, we really decided to take a different tack, and that was to begin to have a conversation with the folks who should provide comprehensive care, i.e. the primary care providers, which do that in most societies, and see if there wasn't a way we could create a movement towards an ability for us to buy that kind of care across the spectrum. So I guess about 3 years ago now, we had 47 large employers that met with all of the primary care organizations, and out of that meeting was born the joint principles of the patient-centered medical home. When the buyers said to the providers, you need to agree on a set of principles around the concept of more robust, more comprehensive, more integrated care. So that's sort of the birth of the idea and the partnership between the buyers and the employers. It's now grown to a much larger, with well over 600 organizations that are part of it, including hospitals, all the national healthcare plans, many of the large consumer groups, the employer associations. I think there's a total of 19 medical specialty groups that have endorsed the concept, et cetera. So it's grown to a rather large organization that's really fundamentally trying to drive change towards more comprehensive primary care.
Yes.
We also are a global employee, as many large companies are, and you know we noted that in many societies those who have really integrated comprehensive robust primary care as the base of the healthcare delivery system seem to be happier, and obviously the healthcare costs are twice as much in our society as they are in any other society. I know that's been quoted many times, but it's true.
Right. You mentioned the growth of the participation in the collaborative, but from where I sit, my perspective is that actual implementation of patient-centered medical homes has not been quite so widespread, and there's certainly distance to go. And I'm wondering, from where you sit, how do you see this idea translating to the population at large? Sort of over what time frame? Are the demonstrations that are included in some of the healthcare bills wending their way through Congress an appropriate right next step from your perspective, or do we need to take bigger leaps at this point?
Well, the original concept when we met after about a year of sort of sorting out our thoughts and directions between the partnership between the buyers and the providers, we asked the national healthcare plans into the room because companies buy their healthcare through the five or six national healthcare plans. And some local ones as well, and we sort of thought probably the best way forward would be to really design some pilots around the concept to kind of kick the tires to proof it out in various communities around the country, and so that led to a number of pilots beginning to evolve in the commercial marketplace. Some legislation was passed for it to occur in CMS, although that they haven't kicked off yet.
Mm-hmm.
But there are many pilots that are multi-stakeholder pilots with many healthcare plans that are rolling out. I think at last two, there was a little over 100 that I counted. Kind of rolling out around the country, of which a dozen or 20 or so are really pretty far along and pretty robust in terms of the scope and the size of the pilots. But the concept was to build into these pilots pretty rigorous analysis to look at them academically, to kick the tires with them, to sort of see how the results would look, and then from what we learned to kind of move forward. Some of the results are out on some of the early pilots at the first year and into the second year, and what we're seeing consistently across the dozen or so that are out is that indeed better upstream care results in i.e. better care coordination, better primary care, better prevention, better access into the primary care provider's office results in significant decline in the utilization of emergency rooms and hospital beds.
I saw some press about group health in Puget Sound.
That's correct. That's one of the early pilots. They now have data for 2 years. They've published for the first year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that they and a number of other sites have been experimenting with this.
That's correct.
Do you see differences across different pilot locations in the model being used? Is there significant variation in the models being rolled out and tinkered with?
Well, there's variation in what's looked at. There's variation in how it's rolled out. I think what's a pretty constant is just simply looking at applying better care coordination, more robust primary care in an ambulatory setting, resulting in less need for hospital beds and emergency room utilization, you know, is pretty much. I mean, what's been looked at has been different. For example, in North Dakota, they looked at the disease diabetes with a much more coordinated approach to the care management of diabetics, and they resulted in about a $500 a year savings for each of the patients, which they shared with the practices. That resulted in moving from a pilot to an actual rollout across the state as we speak, which is what's happening with many of these pilots. The same in Geisinger. Geisinger did better care coordination, better upstream care, looking at a range of chronic diseases for elderly people. And what they discovered was a 48% reduction in rehospitalization, a 20% reduction in hospitalization, a 12% reduction in ER utilization, an ROI of 251%, significant 7% savings. And again, the lesson that they've learned from that is that they're going to now move beyond the pilot phase and roll it out across their system. The same with Intermountain. Intermountain did it in a number of locations, saw the same kind of results. Those are integrated systems.
Right.
And what we've seen in individual practices across the country, and there's probably been over 100 that I've visited, Javier is an example. He's a pediatrician down in Florida, single physician, 41% Medicare, and again, better care coordination, better empowerment, better education of the patients, better access to the primary care team resulted in going from an average of about one asthmatic admitted to the hospital a week to none in 14 months. And that, when you carry that beyond the United States and look globally at places that are really doing this or who are 10 or 15 years ahead of us, is exactly the pattern we saw. I mean, in Denmark, for example, it is a rare event now to hospitalize patients for chronic diseases because that's managed with better care coordination, better primary care, better care integration, in a medical home type environment. Including as migration occurs out, actual links to Wi-Fi, equipment monitoring at the home, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I was going to ask about how this model interacts with some other sort of initiatives, new developments. People talk about Health 2.0, for example, and you mentioned sort of the Wi-Fi monitoring.
Yes.
Interactive connection. Do those sorts of tools help to enable the demonstrations to work more efficiently and effectively? Or are they too expensive in some cases?
No, they're not. I mean, I think in many cases, most of those kinds of things are in fact much less expensive than hospital rooms, right? I mean, the hospital is about the most expensive place you can treat some of these diseases. And by the way, it's dangerous. I mean, it's not a place you want to go if you have
sick people in hospitals.
Yeah, you have sick people in hospital, and people get sick in hospitals. It's an unsafe place. What I think is happening, frankly, and I think it is a 2.0 kind of issue. I mean, we're really at a juncture in time when the docs will have the kinds of tools. And we're already beginning to see them roll out, that really empower them from an outpatient sort of vantage point with a control center really at their desk with real information provided to them. So some of this care can and is done asynchronously and can and is done virtually, in which you begin to have the kind of data flow that will empower the physicians' minds the way X-rays empowered their vision. I mean, it's that kind of transformation that's occurring.
Wonderful.
And in some places, it's further along than others. Some places in the United States, it's further along than others in the United States. And if you look globally, there are places where, again, like the Danish model, they've gone from 155 hospitals down to 25. I mean, you know, it's just again a rare event to have, you know, the kinds of diseases that can be monitored remotely and can be monitored with a more integrated approach to care, to have to put them in a hospital where you're, you know, where they're in danger.
Mm-hmm. So
I mean, it's a phenomenal change, and that's exactly what, you know, what the example of North Dakota was, or what the example in Colorado was, or in North Carolina. In North Carolina, the state of North Carolina and Community Care North Carolina began to focus on better care coordination integration, and resulted in, I think it was a 44% reduction in the number of patients that were hospitalized for asthma. The same story that we talked about, and these aren't integrated systems by any stretch of the imagination. These are folks that are eligible for Medicaid, and the same in Colorado. Very similar results within the Medicaid population, with again better upstream care resulting in lower downstream cost.
Mm-hmm. Are there any particular sets of incentives that you can generalize about that have proven to be most effective in yielding desired results?
I think aligning payment around what it is you want to buy, right?
Well,
I mean, we currently align payment around buying stuff. I mean, if a bill is submitted for doing stuff, we pay for it. What we find is that when you begin to align incentives, you know, around paying for care coordination, care integration. I mean, for example, in the United States, most docs don't have a clue who their patients are, even. And they don't have a sense of responsibility for making sure that all of them have their colonoscopies done, or their breast exams done, or their immunizations done, because, you know, there's no sense of I'm responsible for that. So you need to align that, right? So one of the alignments that other societies have done and other integrated systems have done, or the VA in the United States has done, is that they basically incent the patients and the docs by aligning them in a location where both agree that that's their home, that's where their medical records are, and somebody's responsible. They've got a target on their back to make sure that, you know, they don't die of breast cancer because they didn't have their breast screens, right?
Right.
And I was visiting a clinic in Spain, and I saw, I was one went into the doc's workroom, and there were three names on the board, and I said to the one of the docs there, I said, who are those names? She said, oh, those are the three women in the community that after sending them an email, after mailing them, after phoning them, they still haven't gotten their breast exam. So we're sending a car out today to make sure that it wasn't for our failure to make sure that they got their screening exams, that they die of breast cancer. I mean, you know, that kind of community-based responsibility and aligning payment around that, I think is key for a system to really work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have the most malaligned system in the world. I mean,
certainly needs a lot of work.
You know, I mean, that's why we're twice as expensive as anybody in the world, or one part of the reason. I mean, it's kind of like the Olympics a few years ago, right? Where we got the very best players in the world, and we have really good, well trained physicians here. We have really excellent hospitals, medical schools, et cetera. And, you know, we put them all on the court, we were the best basketball players, and we got whipped, right, by somebody. I can't remember who it was. But, the fact was we didn't play together as a team. We couldn't throw the ball. I mean, that's what happens every day in our healthcare delivery system. We have nobody coordinating care. I mean, somebody can have five specialists, and, you know, one's doing the exact opposite of what the other's doing, and nobody's talking to each other, right? It's really dangerous.
Right. So you've alluded to some of your experiences and what you've seen in other places around the world, and I know you've had a lot of other experiences around the world in your earlier parts of your career. And I'm wondering, you know, which of these examples that you've seen or other experiences from your past do you particularly draw on in looking at developing this model further?
Well, I mean, it's not even around the world. It's here as well. I mean, I think one of the major systems here in the United States that's really driven a lot of the inefficiency out of the system is the Veterans Administration. I mean, they moved from, you know, basically a hospital-based system to an outpatient primary care-based system with clinics, you know, and I don't know, 700 or so locations around the country, you know, really with a focus on comprehensive integrated care, and just drove tremendous efficiency and resulted in the highest patient satisfaction of any of our healthcare delivery systems in the United States. A phenomenal change given, you know, my experience in training in their hospitals earlier in my career.
Mm-hmm. That's a real story.
And you know, if you look at other models of care here like Geisinger and Kaiser and some of the integrated systems. I mean, they really do well. I mean, the statistics show that you know, if you're in a integrated system where somebody just pays enough attention to make sure that you take your aspirin, that your blood pressure is controlled, and you take your Lipitor, your lipid lowering agents, that. You know, you have one third less likelihood of having a myocardial infarction than somebody age adjusted in a system where nobody's coordinating your care.
Right.
I mean, it's a phenomenal difference. I mean, we have twice as many heart surgeons and heart surgeries in this country, and I think, you know, part of the reason why we need to is that we fail to provide robust primary care and prevention. So, and if you want to look globally at systems that have really taken this model, I would have to say first that in my looking and studying and reading about this, it's really an American model that sort of went global. It's kind of like the Japanese business model that, you know, came back to America, and when they asked where it came from, they said, "Oh, it's the Wharton School of Business," right? The Danes came here under Harkness Fellowship under the Commonwealth Fund, studied what was going on at Kaiser, read the pediatric literature about medical home, kind of went back to Denmark and designed a system that really focused on that. And, you know, they're one of the few countries in the world.
They actually did it.
One of the few countries in the world that actually has a curve of cost trends downward.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, downward.
Right.
I mean, not go broke upward like our system is, downward. And again, it's not very hard. It's not very difficult. I mean, it was putting money into the front end of the system, developing a robust system of prevention and primary care, putting the technology and the tools to really do more effective management at the level of the doctor-patient relationship in the primary care delivery system. Spain has gone from being 19th in the world to fourth with the same transformation. In the meantime, you know, according to the study in health affairs that I've read, we've gone to 19th of 19 developed economies, dead last.
Yes, that's troubling. So do you see an opportunity and a role for government-led health reform along these lines? What you've been describing to me is really private payer-driven and integrated delivery system-driven developments in the direction of patient-centered medical home. Is the job done? Is the job close to being done? Do we need the government to step in? How can it help?
Well, to be frank and blunt, absolutely honestly, and that's the kinds of dialogues we've had at the level of the White House and the recent roundtable where we were discussing this, and certainly, I'm in Washington today visiting some of the folks on the Hill about this. Why? Because how healthcare is delivered in our country is so dependent on how CMS buys healthcare. I mean, that's 50% of the spend.
Sure, as the biggest buyer. Yeah.
Yeah. So when we try to buy healthcare and we don't buy it, you know, in a model of healthcare that's around how CMS buys it, it makes it very difficult for us, the non-government buyer. I mean, we can buy it in integrated systems but that only accounts for about 6% of the places where we can buy, right?
Right.
I mean, much of the country, even if I, you know, even if I tried, I couldn't buy, you know, the kind of care that's available at Geisinger. I mean, I just can't buy it because it's
right. To have the systems in place.
You know, so we have to help. We have to help virtualize what those guys do. I mean, look at what they do and virtualize it. I mean, that's health 2.0. I mean, that's taking a primary care doc and helping him have the kinds of tools that would allow a simple registry, the ability to track diseases, the ability to be compensated for tracking diseases, the ability for a payment reform to occur where they actually get paid for having an email, an asynchronous conversation with my patients to, you know, to do follow-up. Well, they're only paid now for face-to-face encounters. And the reason why they're paid that way is because that's how Medicare buys, right?
Right.
I mean, that's my dilemma. That's all of our dilemma.
Right. Yeah, and there's certainly demonstrations looking at bits and pieces of this, and there's hope, for example, in my home state, Massachusetts, we're looking at a global payment transition over the next 5 years.
Yeah, Massachusetts is doing some very exciting things. And, I mean, I think there's quite a bit of interest in the medical home there. I was just recently meeting with some of the leadership in the state. And, you know, there's a lot of excitement on one hand. On the other hand, you know, they're closing their primary care training programs at Harvard. I mean, it's very interesting, but what our system values, what they pay a lot of money for is, you know, is procedures and not for the kinds of relationship-based care, the kind of healing arts that prevent procedures from being necessary.
Right. And as you say, we really need to reform that at a more global level.
Yeah. Sort of, I mean, that's going to take a national effort and you know, that's going to take a real emphasis on priorities. But other countries have done it, and they're in having done that, they're very successful. I mean, the VA has done it, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's really transformed.
I mean, they're continuing to look at improving it. As we speak, but I mean the amount of progress they've made is phenomenal.
Yes. So you mentioned the White House roundtable. I'd wanted to ask about that. Did you find that to be a productive encounter? Did you feel that folks were listening? And in your current visit, do you feel that there's an opportunity to make an impact?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's a great deal of interest. I mean, the video is out there on C-SPAN, or you can YouTube, you know, White House Roundtable and
yeah,
find it. But I mean, what they really did was present 7 or 8 of these early pilots and some of the results, and then had a conversation around it. And I think that the White House came away with the realization that there was a whole lot more happening on the ground than they even were aware of. And they were aware of a lot. And by the way, on the political spectrum, there's interest in this whole transformation, which is different than reformation, on both sides of the aisle. I mean, Grassley's been very supportive of it in recent meetings that we had with him in Iowa. Hatch in Utah has been extremely supportive of it. There's medical home pilots that are going on, I would say, at the Medicaid level in just about every state. And so irregardless of whether they're red or blue states, you know, this whole drive for transformation is really got a lot of steam.
So what's your prognosis, Paul? What do you think? 5 years from now, do you think this will be more fully diffused through the country? Do you think we need national legislation in order to implement this?
Well, first of all, we are getting national legislation. There's language in both the Senate and the House side around this. I think certainly the White House sees the importance of more robust primary care and prevention, you know, which is really what we're talking about. with the technology underneath it to drive it. I think you know, in 5 years we'll have a much clearer picture of the value of this in non-integrated systems. I think in 5 years we will have a very clear picture of it in integrated systems. We're already beginning to see the evidence of that. And I think we'll be in a place perhaps of some desperation, given the Massachusetts experience of reformation without transformation, i.e., you know, more folks that need primary care without access to it because, you know, the infrastructure is not in place to deliver it effectively.
Yes. Well, thank you very much, Paul. I wonder, before we wrap up, if there's anything else that you'd like to share with us today about the state of the art or your vision for the future of the primary patient-centered medical home.
I think you covered it very well. I mean, I think that there, I have a sense of real optimism. I'm a glass half full kind of guy, and I have a sense of real optimism that you know, we're really beginning to see some transformation at the ground level, and the physicians and the patients in practices where this has happened are happier patients, the happier physicians. And more effective care turns out to be actually cheaper care or more valuable care.
Right. And hopefully nobody can argue with that. Well, you heard it here, folks. Dr. Paul Grundy, glass half full kind of guy, speaking with us today. He is the president of the Patient-Centered Primary Care Collaborative and director of healthcare for IBM Global Wellbeing and Health Benefits. Paul, I appreciate your taking the time to speak with us today. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It's only a pleasure.